This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
It's 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob.
Well, I must be Mercedes then. And we're on community radio 3CR with Friday Rave.
All right, welcome again to a Friday Rave with me, Mercedes.
Oh, and me, Jacob.
Right, okay. Here we are again, coming to you from the wonders of the internet and all those awful satellite things that we always complain about. However you're listening, on 855 AM or through 3cr.org.au, we're recording this on Thursday morning because Friday, when you're listening, is actually a public holiday that's got something to do with some kind of football game or whatever. I don't know. I lost interest in the football last week.
As did I. But also, that should come with a caveat that if anything major happens in the next 36 hours and we don't miss it, that's why, because it is Thursday morning this morning. And I will say we're both recording from not at our normal locations. So if there's any cutouts, you know why.
Yeah, this is on a wing and a prayer. But look, a couple of things. I wanted to just finish off what we started last week, and that was a talk about the War Reserve Stockpile Allies Israel bill, where they're removing now what this is, and there's another bill that's going through that I want to link it to. They're removing the restrictions on what you see. There's this stockpile in various locations in Israel that's actually stacks of weapons that we don't know what they are. We'd be silly to believe there were no nukes involved or chemical weapons or anything else that are there to be used by the United States or Israel or other allies with US approval that just sit permanently in Israel. And they don't, and it was established in the aftermath of the 1973. I think it was Reagan established it, but I can't be absolutely sure on that. In 1989,
it was established.
When, sorry?
1989.
89, as late as that?
Yeah.
Right, okay, so 89, so that makes it Bush the Elder.
Yeah.
Okay, that surprises me that it's as late as that. But anyway, at the moment, those weapons, we don't know what's there. There have been all kinds of audits that have failed, and the official audit office and the rest of it have said, fuck, we don't know what's there anymore. But there was a limit to only add to it by $200 million a year. So, I mean, they could, you know, only $200 million a year. Now, that has now been removed. So they can send whatever weapons, stockpile them in Israel to be used by the United States or Israel or their allies. And it doesn't even say particularly to be used on Palestine. It could be used against Iran, could be used against Yemen, could be used against Syria or Lebanon. Or it won't be Syria because Syria is now working with Israel. Could be used against anyone, and that restriction has been removed. And as we said last week, with Australia now a domestic source for the US Department of Defense, Department of War, which it's been renamed to, it means Australian weapons must be stockpiled there. Now, they're Australian parts for weapons, sure. Might be just weapons made with Australian critical minerals. It might just be weapons made with Australian. What's that?
The guidance kits.
The guidance kits, drones, everything. are there. Now, so that's what's happening there now. At a time when the UN, and we should get to the UN as well, but then the other thing that's been happening, it's just absolutely outrageous, is the, what's it called? The authorization, the, what do they call it? The, I can't think of the actual name. Advanced authorization for military action. Uh-huh. It's called the acronym is the AUMF, which is what it is. Authorized use of military force, right? I was going to say it authorizes the use of military force. It's the authorized use of military force. Now, what this is, it's a blanket approval that the United States puts in place so that it can use military force in any of the country that it's already been authorized to. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't even know where they are, but they're saying there's at least 60 countries. And we're seeing that what's happening, you see, by changing these laws about stockpiling arms in Israel, by changing these laws about pre-approving military force in various countries, what they're actually saying is they want to act outside what the current laws were. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they would not need to change them. So it's the United States military and government and, you know, capital saying that the laws are too restrictive on us. So they're removing or amending these laws or extending the gamut that they can operate in.
Yeah, and I think the that when we talk about changing the laws, if you think about the timing of which this amendment is coming in regards to the war reserve stockpile in Israel, it was in August it was then the Department of Defense, but the Department of War released the findings of an audit about this war reserve stock for allies Israel. What that audit found was that the ability to verify the accuracy of the inventory was limited, and that the Army, Navy, and Air Force appointed officials did not consistently comply with the property accountability procedures and requirements from 2022 through to November 6, 2024, for the dates that the audit was set for. And so that was released on the 7th of August, and the officials stated that, this is a quote from that audit, that the officials stated they did not choose, they chose not to follow the WRSIA procedures because they believed the procedures were outdated. So basically they don't know what's there. They can't account for anything. They don't know what's been up until November 6, 2024 of what is actually there, what's been taken or what's been used. And now they're putting forward changing the law so that it's just open access with no oversight.
Unbelievable, isn't it? Well, no, it's utterly believable. This is what's happening. This, when the laws are changing, this is what's happening in the Western world, run by the United States. And it is run by US capital. I'm not talking about Donald Trump. He's just a dickhead puppet, right? He's not actually, you know, I don't actually believe in the strongman theory of government. There are people pulling his strings, and that's what's making the and that's what the decisions are based on. It's about making capital there. See, and then I mentioned these 60 countries. I want to just briefly mention, because I had a phone call with a friend, you know who you are, listening out there, who told me that I should be, was I sorry or did I renege from my pre-US election position that bring on Donald Trump? Well, no, I don't. I know how awful it is over in the United States. I know how ugly and how terrible it is for people in the United States. It's almost as terrible as it is for people in countries the United States is involved in. And I'm not making light of that. And I'm not just saying stuff them. I'm saying things are coming to a head. We're in a situation now where leading military and foreign affairs commentators are talking about the United States overreach, talking about the end of empire, talking about Australia needing to seriously consider removing itself from the US alliance. And this did not happen under Biden. This would not have happened under Kamala Harris. You know, ICE wouldn't have been as terrible on the streets of the US as it is under Trump. I grant that. But Gaza would have been the same. Ukraine would have been the same. Sudan, Yemen would have been the same. All the spending on the military would have been the same. The only difference is that people are recognizing it. Now, the problem with that, of course, is that people are talking about already thinking about post-Trump. Someone said to me, it's only 3 years more to go. Because remember, this is less than a year old now, isn't it?
Mm.
When did Trump start? Was it last year?
Last year.
Yeah, November? 24. So we've had less than a year of the prick so far. And already people, you imagine what it's going to be like in 2 more years' time if we don't do something.
And I think and to say it's come to a head is that, you know, that I think that it's an indictment of all of us to say, like, we know that this is an outright fascistic form of government, changing the laws, extrajudicial killings in Venezuela, what's happening on the ground in ICE, coupled with the groundswell of anti-immigration policies amongst the population, which is leading to a government which allows itself to increasingly bring on fascistic policies and physically in the form of ICE. And so we knew that this was happening with the masks off and what it's taken for this prick to actually be in power and the government and the people that are pulling the, you know, that are doing the work behind that. It's just got the mask is off. Yes, what would happen in Gaza was still happening under Biden, the administration, and Kamala Harris. Foreign policy wouldn't have changed, but we're seeing that. And the fact that I feel like it's an indictment of the rest of us to go to have to wait to that point to not see it clearly.
Exactly. And just want to mention Venezuela. The United States has been bombing ships off the coast of Venezuela. And they're calling them narco-terrorists now. Drug dealers are now terrorists. Now, no support for drug dealers, whether they're American or wherever they are. But let's face it, it's the American banks that actually provide the infrastructure and the finance for the South American drug cartels to bring all kinds of drugs, mainly coke, into the United States because it's, you know, they're capitalists and it's a demand. The United States is demanding drugs. Americans are supplying drugs. I mean, it doesn't make it right, but that's what you have under capitalism. But now the drug dealers are being called narco-terrorists. And by calling them terrorists, you can do whatever you like. And people are recognizing this under Trump. But I want to just take your mind back 10 years ago when President Obama issued an executive order declaring Venezuela a threat to the United States and giving the United and saying, you know, that the main priority of the United States at the time needed to be the growing threat to national security from the Venezuelan government and the Venezuelan drug cartels. But nobody, well, some of it did, but mainstream didn't say and still don't say Obama ramped up the rhetoric and the war against the people of Venezuela. No one talks about that. In fact, the left, a big part of the mainstream left, the mild left, still holds Obama up as something that this is what we could have. This is the ideal president of the last of the modern period. All right, but this is, I'm trying to say, this has got nothing to do with Trump as such any more than it had to do with Obama as such. This is about the appointed president of the United States in his position as the manager for global capital, announcing the decisions and authorizing the decisions that global capital want and need to maintain their hegemony over the rest of the world. And the fact that it's Trump now is people are seeing that what, well, they're not seeing that it's global capital, they're still seeing it in terms of Trump, the evil dictator, like Hitler was just an evil dictator, like all the rest of them were like aberrations. And it's not. This is the face of capitalism.
And the designation of narco terrorists. I mean, I think that it would be remiss not to mention Palestine Action in the UK being designated a terrorist organization. Just this week, Trump has said that Antifa is now a terrorist organization, whatever you want to call. So it's just a broad kind of anyone who's an anti-fascist is a terrorist. So whatever that means in terms of.
Wow, I'm a terrorist.
Yeah, so am I.
What can we say? What can we say? You know, but anyway, well, I mean, and they should be terrified. Terror, I mean, look, here's the thing. I'm only just coming to this in my brain, so I haven't thought this through properly yet. Sorry, Mercedes. Sorry, listeners. But the idea of a terrorist is someone who terrifies people. And the fact that global capital is now terrified by the fact that the Houthis, by the fact that the Palestinians, by the fact that the South Americans, by the fact that Antifa can actually have an impact on reducing their hegemony. It terrifies them. And I think that's a bloody good thing. They should be scared. They should be scared. We terrify everything they hold dear. And I actually wear it with pride.
Yep. So let's keep doing it.
God, what are we letting ourselves into here? All right.
Knock at the door, or?
This is a totally unscripted edition of a Friday rave.
It most certainly is.
We should talk about the other thing we should talk about is our leader, Albanese
at the UN.
Yeah, what's gone down this morning?
Well, Albanese made the speech to the UN at the 80th for the 80th anniversary of the UN. Lots of pontifications. Also lined up for his nice little photo op with Donald Trump and set up a meeting for next month. But it's usually Penny Wong that speaks, addresses the UN, but Albanese did it this time. And there was really not, I mean, it was kind of much of the same pontifications that you come to expect, I think. But, you know, one of the things I feel like that he spoke on was the importance of the UN being a space for middle powers and smaller nations to have their position. It's not just about quote unquote great powers using their vetoes. So there's some people kind of saying it was a little subtle dig at the US, but let's be honest, it's not. It's just kind of much of the same of this idea in terms of what, like the UN has said that there is a genocide going on and there are on four or five counts of under the Genocide Convention. And there's already two under the Genocide Convention, so many things that the Australian government should be and has not been doing in order to stop an ongoing genocide. So I feel like we can see it as much as pontifications. But there was one quote here where is it? This is a quote from Albanese. The shared mission and purpose of the United Nations is not merely to contain the threat of war, it is to create the conditions for peace.
Oh, can you say that again?
The shared mission and purpose of the United Nations is not merely to contain the threat of war, it is to create the conditions for peace.
Right, so peace is more than the absence of war. But what does that mean? I mean, we know what it means to us, but what does it mean to them?
What does it mean to them? I feel like it, is just a maintenance of the status quo. To contain the threat of war, there's currently a genocide going on in Gaza, and the United Nations has proven powerless, and the Australian government, the leader of the Australian government, is saying we're creating the conditions for peace, but we don't need to contain the threat of war. There's a genocide going on, and the government's not doing anything about it.
Yeah.
So the maintenance of peace.
Maintenance of peace is, as you put it, the maintenance of the status quo. So it's peaceful while wars are going on. That's okay, as long as it's not affecting the status quo of the flow of capital. And what I've said 100 times is, you know, the main task of global capital is the concentration of wealth, to get more and more dollars into fewer and fewer pockets. So as long as that can be maintained, it's peace. So I wonder what, you know, if the attack on Palestine ended tomorrow, would that be peace? No. It'd be peace in Albanese's eyes because it didn't affect the flow of capital. So what we need to work out is we know what we need. All we need to do is point out the hypocrisy and the bullshit of what things like the United Nations are.
And I think there's a good, you know, in terms of when we talk about peace, peace is the maintenance of the status quo that could be seen as a permanent war against people and populations. So peace is the stability of a state of permanent war.
So what do you say? War is peace?
But the maintenance of the status quo is still, you know, that is, it relies on exploitation, of capitalist exploitation internationally. It relies on the theft of land, and in order to have maintenance of that status quo, as we said, you know, the designation of terrorists because they're terrified, in order to maintain that peace that they're talking about and the maintenance, what is actually that is required of that? And then I feel like, you know, it's not just in terms of foreign policy, but it's, I guess, what's been called, like, has been known as the imperial boomerang of the turning inward to maintain it within the capitalist countries like Australia, who consider themselves a middle power, to maintain and to contain.
Yeah, because that's what it's about. So, and we talk about this on the global level, you know, the UN, Venezuela, Palestine, Ukraine, Yemen, Sudan, and don't even get me started on Mali and Niger and all that that's still going on. Maybe we can talk about that another day. But on a more local level, I did note that the Prime Minister, Albanese, once he got to New York, referred to the the Optus outage that led to people dying because people couldn't get through to 000. How outrageous is that? We, as a first world country with one of the highest standards of living, let's face it, we have one of the highest standards of living. I mean, you know, look at us. Amongst the poor in this country, we're talking on satellite, putting out a radio show, and that we have a global company, Optus, making decisions that mean we can't get an ambulance when we need one. And that might be, you know, people will say, exaggerating or making it a headline where it shouldn't be, or whatever that word is. I can't think of it right now. But Albanese referred to it at his doorstop interview when he got to New York a few days ago. And what's happened is it's exactly the same as what we're talking about Trump. Albanese has suggested that Roo, I think his name is, the CEO at Optus, should resign, or should be considering resigning. And they're talking about not following the established processes, just like on a bigger scale, you mentioned that report about the stockpile in the Zionist project. What's happening here is something that friends of mine and I were talking about and campaigning on about 20 years ago, and that is the offshoring of telecommunications services. Why, when you or I or our parents or anybody, your parents, mine are long gone, call 000, does the call need to go to an overseas call center in a third world country to speak to someone before a message comes back to Australia to dispatch a fire brigade or an ambulance service or the cops? Why is that the case? Now, surely, I mean, we know why they're doing it, because it saves a dollar. Because people, I've been to call centres in Manila. I went there as part of a union exchange where people over there were trying to set up a union for call centre operators. And let me tell you, these people are sitting there in adult diapers, they call them, nappies, because they're not allowed to take piss breaks. These people live in dormitories attached to the call centres, and there's a whole community, and I'm talking about in Quezon City, there's a whole community of people sleeping under cardboard boxes waiting for somebody to be sacked so that they can take the job. And this is a constantly moving line. Now, people shouldn't be treated like that in any situation, but neither should the Australian government and the companies operating on behalf of the Australian government that are providing essential services such as getting an ambulance to somebody who's having a heart attack, or a police to somebody who's being attacked, or a fire brigade to a house that's burning down, shouldn't be relying on that kind of oppression. Why can't we deal with that ourselves? I mean, it's bad enough. It's bad enough that you have to go through an international call station when you're trying to book a campsite, the national park, for Christ's sake. All right? But for something like this, surely we should say we should pay these people top dollar.
Yeah.
And this is what global capitalism is about. It's not what's happened with Optus, what's happened to the people who died in New South Wales and Western Australia because they couldn't get an ambulance, isn't different to what's happening with the stockpile in Israel. Of course, it's a much greater, it's a difference of scale, of course. But what it is, it's about global capital squeezing every cent they possibly can out of poor people to make more money for themselves. And this is what needs to stop. It needs to stop in Palestine, it needs to stop in Venezuela, it needs to stop in Australia. Anyway, that's my little rant.
Yeah, and we might end on that note because I think we're just about out of time.
All right, sorry.
No. But I think it would just be good to mention that just last week, whilst the defence treaties with still being with Papua New Guinea, just last week Australia has put a contract to a Pacific Island nation to host a top secret, highly confidential, classified rather, cloud service network.
Oh, right. I wonder where that would be. I don't know. I'd be guessing. It's hard to say,
but it just, I think it, that was, that's just come out last week.
Yeah. Oh, well, this is what's happening here. And then something will fall to pieces and it will be blamed on some company blaming people in a third country for not following messages. Anyway, that's all we've got time for this week, folks.
And you're tuned to a Friday Rave on Community Radio 3CR. Stay tuned for Radio MMT. And we'll be back at you for more raves next week.
Till then.